Welcome to Juice. We're at Provine. I'm Emily Harmon.
I'm Gwen Douglas.
And today we're here with...
Sean O'Callaghan.
From?
From Tenuta di Caglione, new project in Radin Chianti.
Lovely.
Super happy to have you, Sean. And I think for everybody that's listening, it's interesting to maybe let them know why we know each other. So, Sean, your background maybe is a good segue point into how we came across each other.
So I moved to Tuscany from Germany after being in Germany for 8 years. I moved to Tuscany when I went on holiday and met a guy called John Dankley, who was the owner of Riachine. He offered me a job. Keep the story short, he offered me a job and I stayed there for 26 years.
Amazing. That was the longest holiday ever taken.
Exactly. And then one day Emily came and did a vintage for me, with me.
Yeah, it was very great actually. Yeah. So we met each other through another winemaker who is quite well known in Australia now, Tom Shobrook. Sort of the fundamental part of his learning of winemaking was from Sean, and he worked for Sean between, I think it was 2000 and 2006, or 1999 and 2006.
He did sort of 6 or 7 vintages with me.
Yeah, and he was sort of saying it was great because he sort of, like, he still says like a little part of his heart was left in Goli and Chianti.
Oh, nice.
And he always pointed out the little house you can see from the vineyard. So, and I did harvest with Tom in 11. And he said, oh, if you're going to Europe and you want to do a harvest, then you have to do a harvest with Sean.
So what have we got here? Because
Sean, Di Caglione. So, tell us a little bit about Tenuta Di Caglione, because I think project.
What happened is I left Riachine in just before harvest in 2016. I was helping in the meantime an Austrian couple who had just bought two beautiful properties and were renovating them opposite Montevettina.
Radin Chianti,
yeah. So opposite Montevettina, which is, they make the great Pergola Torte. So in 15, I helped them make a little bit of wine in somebody else's cellar. And then 16, I started making the wine in our cellar, which I'd set up. And so we're tasting now the rosé.
Beautiful colour.
Which is, I think rosé should be made out of grapes that have been picked to make rosé, not out of Seigneur or anything like that. So we go through all the vineyards 3 or 4 weeks before harvest and pick what's too much. So where there's too many grapes on a plant, and we leave just one bunch per cane. And we press it without destalking it, put it in a cement tank and keep it at 13 degrees centigrade. And it spontaneous fermentation, no added yeast, and just keep it there, and this is what comes out.
What's really nice is that this actually is something that you could put on a table. My mum and dad would drink this without thinking, but equally I think wine people will appreciate it because there's a finesse to it.
Totally, it's really delicious, and I have to say there's something sort of like almondy about it. Maybe I'm crazy, but it made me think of Battenberg cake.
Weird, I know. Battenberg, right? Cake.
Yeah, you know Battenberg with the sort of almond going on.
Slight, but then there's a little slight sweetness in there.
A slight sweetness and a little nut, and it's...
Which is totally...
To me, Battenberg cake.
From the fermentation, the sweetness is
really
natural. So, yeah.
It's really nice.
So it's 100% Sangiovese. It's a way of making, rather than doing a green harvest earlier on, we do a sort of red harvest. And to improve the red grapes, and this is what comes out. So it's
lovely.
It's a little bit of a byproduct from the viticulture rather than what we used to do is Seigneur, or the Salasso we call it in Italy, where you take 10 to 15% of the must before it starts fermenting to increase the concentration. So we move on to the Chianti Classico. So this is the 2016 Chianti Classico, 100% Sangiovese, just from the vineyards we have in Rada. So we have a few vineyards just outside the Rada Comune, so in Bagliali and in Gaiole, but this is a sort of a selection. The idea is like a village, so it's a combination of all our vineyards, and made with long maceration, so 2 to 3 months maceration. A combination in this case of cement and stainless steel, and a little bit of older oak.
Obviously I was very privileged, I got to see how your approach to Sangiovese and Chianti. Do you think what you're doing in Chianti is very different to a lot of producers in Chianti? And I think unfortunately because there are lots of producers making wine at a bigger scale, it's sort of associated as a terroir that maybe is lesser than say Brunello, but like the wines that I've tried, particularly when you're at Riachine, like I don't find them lesser at all. I think the wines that I've tasted from, particularly Gaioli, like there's lots of potential there, but unfortunately a lot of them fall under this Chianti Classico umbrella that sometimes they get forgotten slightly, or maybe they don't get the same respect. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Like, do you have anything to say about that?
I do indeed. I mean, I think that...
It's a very long question.
Yeah, it's a very long question. Hope you were paying attention.
I know, it was like, when do I come in? When do I come in? Yeah.
I mean, the most important thing about Chianti Classico, I think, is Sangiovese. And I think the huge advantage that Brunello has had over the time is that it's had an identity that's been linked to Sangiovese. And it's a hotter area. So up until 10 years ago, they had an advantage of ripeness. And we hadn't. The wines weren't quite as ripe. But actually, we were making amazing wines in the 90s because we had wines that came in with a full ripeness at 12.5% alcohol. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring out, as I'm a total Sangiovese fan, I'd rather not adulterate it with anything else. We've got Sangiovese in all its formats here, which I think with long maceration, with lots of attention in the vineyard, you can actually bring out, if not better, at least as good as wines that are coming out of Brunello or other areas. And I think we have a wonderful microclimate all around Chianti Classico, or Chianti. I'd rather talk about Chianti than Chianti Classico, but the whole area. I think we can make...
Sean was the first person to say to me that he found Sangiovese to be like Pinot Noir, like Nebbiolo, and I remember going there thinking, no, it's not. Like, initially I was like, no, it's not, and it was a really, like, it was a very closed-minded, slightly arrogant viewpoint, like, initially, when I was like, you know what this guy's on about. Like,
but you think it's
like
just because Chianti still had that 80s,
yeah,
like,
I think because that was
bottle.
My...
I mean, that's what my parents drink, the straw bottle, that's my mum loves.
Totally, it was this rustic thing, it's almost like... Chianti by a lot of producers is a little bit similar to Rioja, where you've got this amazing terroir in Rioja, but a lot of people are doing this industrial, quite boring stuff with it. Not enough producers were really, like, it was all, everything fell under the Chianti brand, that the producer then became second, and I think there's been a shift.
I mean, the big problem with working in an appellation like Chianti Classico is Chianti Classico becomes the brand.
That's what I was thinking. So, it's like it becomes difficult to then.
If everybody in the appellation is trying to make wines for journalists like Robert Parker or people who like bigger, softer, sweeter wines, which is what happened in the 90s and the early 2000s, your wines, if you're going to make a Chianti Classico, you're expected that it's going to be big and black and dark, and it's got 20% of Merlot or something else put into it. So when I was a Riocino, the first thing John Dunkley said to me is, we're not going to do that. We're going to make 100% Sangiovese. Even when in the days when I started, we had to put 5% white grapes in the plant. He said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to put 100% Sangiovese and just go ahead.
I guess that becomes the sort of like the mother of invention is like, how do you distinguish yourself in a particular area where you have to fit within rules? How do you distinguish yourself between these rules?
What I'm doing is I'm not trying to, I'm just trying to make the wine. I'm not trying to say, you know, this is the way everybody else should do. This is the sort of stuff I like to drink.
Right.
And as I said, it's a sort of, Sangiovese is a sort of combination between Pinot Noir and Nebbiolo, and I think that's the way it should be made, and that's what I'm trying to do here.
I mean, that Chianti is a very pretty style of Chianti as well. The colour itself as well, it's like transparent, isn't it? But not to focus on the colour too much, but I think very nice.
I'm just going to jump to this one. So this is the big brother of the Chianti. So this is Uno. So this is a new wine which we just started in 2016. I waited for 2016 because it's such a great vintage. And this is sort of just a big brother in the fact that it's a better selection. Everything in the vineyard is, I know more or less what vineyard this is going to come from, and then we go in the cellar and then we take a little selection in the cellar. So the idea is, I'm looking at Burgundy here, so I'm looking at the great Burgundies, which are really light and really elegant. And just give it a touch of wood to lift the fruit, and see where it goes. So there's a little bit more of everything in this wine,
concentrated. So the vineyards for this particular wine, where they're coming from, just Gaioli?
All around Rada.
All around Rada. Okay.
We're Rada, not Gaioli. It used to be Gaioli.
That's very nice.
Okay, we'll get to that. Yeah. And why do you call it Uno? Because I know you also make a wine called Due. So if anybody comes across the two wines, what's the difference?
So Uno is our top wine. So it's, the idea is because it's our number one. So Uno being number one. And also it's 100% Sangiovese. So it's just one great variety. I know it doesn't sound very, you know, a name. But I think the names, the shorter they are and the easier they to remember, it's better to go there. And
short and sweet.
So actually my partners in Austria, they came up with the idea of calling it Uno and Due. We started off making Uno with a different label before we did this project, which was actually the base wine, but we talked to some friends and they advised us and said, you know, it has to be the number one, so that's what we're doing, and I agree. So
it's very delicious. Yeah.
It's very pretty, it's quite floral actually on the
nose. Chianti was bottled about 3 weeks ago now. This was bottled in September, so it's showing really nicely at the moment. I think it's just sort of showing his Sangiovese character, really light and elegant, and but also with a depth. I always think one of my little motes, my quotes is simplicity gives complexity.
Sure.
So the more simple something is, sometimes it can be so complex.
The more you want to think about
exactly. And this is what I'm trying to do with the wines, is something that's so simple when you taste it, but it actually has a huge complexity inside.
Oh, I love that.
The idea is to make something so
pure
and simple.
Not adding everything in the kitchen sink.
And it comes across because that wine's
really
stunning.
Beautiful. Yeah.
As I've seen the wines year to year, they seem to get purer, brighter, more elegant.
That for me was a... Don't spit that last one, I really don't.
So I'm jumping to the Guercio. So right. I was born blind in one eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very good friend called Francesco, who's a chef. And he worked with Ducasse, and he's very well known, and we used to hang out quite a lot. And when we got a little bit drunk, Francesco better than anything. When he got a bit drunk, he called me Guercio Bastard.
Oh my goodness.
And Guercio basically means one-eyed bastard.
I thought it meant one-eyed bandit, but it's
well, that's
that,
being nice.
Yeah,
that's the way I have
PC
to.
Version,
that's the PC version, yeah. So and we put one-eyed rascal on the back.
That this is raised also, it's very nice.
On all the labels there's a little bit of the image of the Il Guercio is raised on all of the labels.
So I did this little logo, which is what they're talking about, which is a little sort of doodle with a one-eyed guy and a... Yeah, anyway, so...
I love it.
So the idea with this wine is it's for a single vineyard from a 700 meter high vineyard in Gaiore, which...
Mello.
Mello. It's called Mello, not Merlo, Mello. And it's run by a guy called Marco and his wife Laura. She's from France, and he treats it like a garden. So it doesn't use any tractors. It's all biodynamic, and you can almost see Siena and Florence, right? And it brings amazing grapes because it's so high that even with the climate change that we've had over the last 15, 20 years, you manage to have grapes which just have an amazing freshness. So I decided with this grapes to do a to go to the borders to see where I can get to with long maceration, no oak. So this is 100%
really?
100% cement. So
wow.
Cement tanks from France, from Nombleau. And we pick the grapes, we put some in bins and a whole bunch, and the others in tanks. And then after about 2 months of normal maceration, normal fermentation, we press out the bins and then top the tanks. So we top them and then close them up with the skins and 20% whole bunch inside. And we just leave them there. It's like a tea bag. It just sits in there and floats around. We call it Piemontesina, but the Piemonte guys don't know what we're talking about.
Okay.
Because we think that's what they do, but they don't actually
they're
do
like,
that.
That's not
no,
what we're
but
doing.
We call it Piemontesina, and so we just top the tank, close it, and leave it there. And we pressed this off the end of February last year. So it's five to 6 months on the skins. And the whole skin thing is with the whole bunches, you get a softness, but also get a huge complexity.
Yeah, there's a big kick going on.
And it's got a spiciness to it, which comes from the whole bunches, which makes it almost Syrah-like in a Croz
Hermitage. Kind of.
I think of Alain Gréaux.
World-class wine. I really like this wine.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So I'm super biased.
I actually want to know what you normally pair this with.
There she comes!
Yeah,
Gwen's very well known for her food and wine pairing.
Well,
but this was a bit of a conundrum for me because I think it can go in many directions.
Well, the nice thing about all these wines, I think, is that if you cool them slightly, they go so well with almost everything, even with fish. I mean, one of my favorite restaurants down on the coast is a place called Lo Scoglietto, and we drank this with roasted fish out of the oven.
Wow.
And I think one of the great things about wines that have an acidity, have a tannin, you can. I mean, you can always drink.
Go anywhere, yeah. But I think that's why every time I taste, I think of something else.
Yeah.
Normally, if I take a sip, I'm instantly taken to a dish. But this one, it's pulling me in many directions. Yeah. Well, because in the beginning, the very before I got the sort of like structure of it, it makes me think of fresh tomatoes because they maybe put it in my head. But then I was thinking, yeah, roasted things, it would do well with things that are grilled because there's a spiciness.
Liver, calves, liver.
Yeah, I really think you're right. I think you can go anywhere. And I think that's why I was struggling with picking one thing, because I think it, every sip, it's like a hologram. It kind of takes you somewhere else.
Great. Sean, thank you so much for the tasting through Tenuta di Caglione. For people that don't know the wine, how do we all find out a little bit more? Like, how do we find you?
You find me on Instagram, Sean Il Guercio. Which Il Guercio is my nickname, so Sean Il Guercio.
We'll add that to the link so everybody can see the spelling.
Caglione.it.
Okay.
And that's great. It, really.
Okay, sorry. Thank you so much, because obviously for me, as I've already said, I'm very biased, but I adore wine, so I'm super happy to have an opportunity to taste them again.
And I'm very grateful to have had a chance to taste them, because they're absolutely delicious. Definitely hope to revisit them again.
I'll visit Sean in Italy.
Yes!
Of course.
Sounds lush. So you can find, as mentioned, him on Instagram. You can find us at juice.podcast.
On Twitter, juice_podcast.
Or at our website at juice.show, where you can pick up a tote bag for you, your mum, or any of your friends, where you can carry 8 of these delicious bottles with you anywhere.
Maybe 10 Riesling.
Maybe
10.
Yeah. I mean, if you can do it, send a picture, send it to us. And otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Em.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
Cheers, everybody.